This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thank you for joining us today for what is the Sanford Consortium for Regenerative Medicine Day. We are delighted to be here at TSRI again, who are hosting the Sanford Consortium for Regenerative Medicine proceedings today. And I'm going to hand straight over to Ed Holmes, who is the president of the Sanford Consortium for Regenerative Medicine. Ed,
over to you. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Alex. I'm Ed Holmes. I'm the president of the Sanford Consortium. And what we're going to do today is to tell you a little bit about the consortium, which is brings together five of the leading biomedical research institutions in San Diego, and we'd like to think in the world. That includes the University of California at San Diego, the Salk Research Institute, the Sanford Burnham Research Institute, the Scripps Research Institute, where we are today, and La Jolla Allergy and Immunology. We have a building that you'll hear a little bit about, which houses about 400 scientists, all committed to doing biomedical research. In addition to the Sanford Consortium, which has been in existence now for 3 or so years, in the last year, the newest member to our family is the Sanford Stem Cell Clinic, which gives us the opportunity to pull from the basic science into the clinical science in a fairly seamless fashion. And that'll be the topic of our discussion today. In just a moment, I'd like to introduce our panel members. We're fortunate in having now five of our exemplary leaders from across the community who've made extraordinary contributions to stem cell research, biomedical research, and in many cases, philanthropy for this community. I think all of you have a program which has a more extensive biosketch on each of these distinguished individuals, and I won't try and repeat all of their background information, but let me give you a few highlights on each one of them, and then we'll get into the panel discussion. First is Robert Klein. Bob is the president of Klein Financial Corporation. He was the primary architect behind Proposition 71, which is the bond initiative which raised $3 billion for stem cell research, and he's going to tell you a bit about that. And the creation of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, of which he is the chairman emeritus. Bob continues to be a staunch supporter of stem cell research in California, in the nation, and actually across the globe. And he's now the director of Americans for Cures Foundation. Next to Bob is Erwin Jacobs. Erwin is the co-founder of Qualcomm Incorporated, was the former CEO of Qualcomm. Erwin and his wife, Joan, have been extraordinary supporters and generous donors to civic organizations across San Diego, such as the Symphony, and academic institutions such as the Jacobs School of Engineering at UC San Diego, clinical programs such as the Jacobs Medical Center at UC San Diego, Salk Institute for Biological Studies, and many other organizations across the country. Erwin has been a champion of stem cell research going back to the launch of Proposition 71, and he serves on our board of the Sanford Consortium. Next to Erwin is Malin Burnham. Malin is the retired chairman of the Burnham Insurance and Rental real estate companies. He is Mr. San Diego in name and in action. He's an extraordinary community leader and philanthropist, and he's chaired more than 10 nonprofit entities, and he currently serves as chair of the Sanford Consortium board. Next to Malin is Denny Sanford. Denny is chairman and CEO of United National Corporation. Denny is one of the leading philanthropists of healthcare and medical research organizations in this country, including Sanford Health in his native state of South Dakota, and several institutions in San Diego, the Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute, the Sanford Stem Cell Clinic at UC San Diego, and the Sanford Consortium for Regenerative Medicine. Denny has a special interest in childhood development, diabetes, and stem cell research, and he serves on the board of the Sanford Consortium. And last and not least is Larry Goldstein. Larry is a distinguished professor of cell and molecular medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He's the director of the Sanford Stem Cell Clinic at UC San Diego, and he's the scientific director of the Sanford Consortium. He's a very productive, active stem cell scientist and a national spokesperson for stem cell research and stem cell issues. So thank you to our panel members, and we'll get started right away. What we're going to do is address several topics, which we hope will be of interest to you, and different members of the panel will speak to these. We would also, at the end, like to open it up for questions and comment from the audience. So let me begin by calling on Bob Klein, who, as I mentioned earlier, is the architect of Proposition 71, which made the entire stem cell effort in California possible. Bob has been a tireless leader for stem cell research and spokesperson for the last X number of years. Bob, thank you for joining the panel, and I think you have a few slides to introduce the topic.
Thank you very much, Dr. Holmes. Before I begin my formal presentation, I'd like to again recognize the value, the critical value of the philanthropic champions, the leaders in this community that make it such a unique place for stem cell research with extraordinary achievements. It's the philanthropic champions early on of Malin Burnham and Erwin Jacobs, with a tremendous lift from Denny Sanford, built on that original base, and the extraordinary scientists at the Salk, at Scripps, at UC San Diego, at the full complement of organizations that Sanford Burnham is now one of the leading components on both coasts, but fundamentally with a powerhouse in stem cell research in San Diego, that make this such a unique environment here in San Diego. And I'm going to address today how that unique ecosystem in San Diego that has an extraordinary collaborative culture has benefited from the Proposition 71, the initiative of the people of California, how the world has benefited from San Diego's leadership, and the tremendous opportunities that are here based upon this broad-based infrastructure that's now in place. I'd like to start by saying that I am a patient advocate. It's important you know my perspective in presenting today. I'm a father of a son with type 1 diabetes, the immune-based type of that disease that destroys the islets in the pancreas, leads to blindness and kidney loss, amputations. And I am the son of a mother who died with Alzheimer's. So from both ends of the age spectrum, this is a personal passion. Certainly, though, when you look at the 80 different patient advocacy organizations that back Proposition 71, you have to understand that when you commit yourself to this new revolution in therapy development and stem cells, you're committing yourself to the very best science in the world with the hope that what happens out of this research provides information and knowledge that allows your family members to benefit, but you have to go with the best science, peer-reviewed science. The state funds and this structure, as I will describe, are based upon a bet on science. Generally, this new revolution is addressing the whole spectrum, and you have to look past your personal family in making that commitment. So to understand the structure of Proposition 71 that helped really lift this incredible environment they started with in San Diego, I would like to quickly hit the high points of Proposition 71. This is an initiative that I wrote in 2003. It requires about 800,000 signatures, voter signatures, to be qualified to put it on the ballot. We got 1.1 million signatures to put it on the ballot. 7 million people voted for it. 80 patient advocacy groups, as I've said, many of them listed there, all California's major chamber of commerce, all California's largest cities came on board. What were they backing? They were backing a $6 billion vote, $3 billion for general obligation bonds to fund stem cell research and therapy development, including phase one and phase two human trials over a period of not less than 10 years, all based upon funding on the best science, with an external peer review board. All the peer review members must come from out of state to avoid conflicts, to avoid collegiality in the decisions, to avoid institutional pressures. Those peer review recommendations go to a governing board. The governing board has 29 members, which is a mix of patient advocates, deans of the UC medical schools, presidents of the major institutes or executive vice presidents of the major institutes in the state. So there's 14 patient advocates. There's approximately 13 members from scientific positions of major research institutions and hospitals, including, for example, the City of Hope, known for its role in cancer and diabetes. And there's four members for the that are come from biotech who have to have multiple a record of successful biotech experience in moving therapies for patients all the way through the system successfully. When we look at the stem cell revolution in medicine, we understand that it takes a tremendous infrastructure and ecosystem. And I'd like to show you, this is the ecosystem that existed in San Diego prior to Proposition 71. Tremendous resources in research with outline specialty centers and support systems with funding recognition from distinguished sources, including the NIH and the Ludwig Cancer Research Institute. When Proposition 71 was fully implemented during my term as chairman of that funding agency, this is what happened. What you have here is an extraordinary ecosystem, and to look at the center of this, you find the unique collaborative culture really crystallized into the Sanford Consortium, which is in the center of the major five research institutes that work with it, including the La Jolla Institute that was added later into this consortium. So as a driver in leveraging funds, in leveraging knowledge, in accelerating the development of therapies, bringing the best scientists together in the Sanford Consortium, both in a physical facility as well as coordinating with the stem cell scientists that are remain in each of the core foundation institutions, has created a phenomenal core driver. But what you should also understand is that in the upper right, there is a CIRM circle that indicates that these institutions have received an approval for a genomics resource center. And in this particular case, it's in a coordination with Stanford and the Salk Institute that lead that effort, but it services this entire ecosystem and, in fact, the major institutes in the state. What you need to understand is that UC San Diego has a CIRM grant as an alpha clinic, which brings together all of the funding for the expertise, including toxicity studies and developmental leadership, as well as clinical leadership in clinical trials for this region. But you also have the leverage, if you see on the outside circle, there are countries there that are partnering. In this particular slide, it shows five countries and the NIH Clinical Research Hospital that are partnering in this effort. There are 15 countries that have partnered now with California who've agreed that if it goes to our peer review and our governing board, that in fact they will fund their scientists on the California team. So what you see here is collaborative culture really maximizing the knowledge of this whole region, leveraged by the global outreach to the best scientists in the world on the areas that they are focused on advancing. And they have the ability then to draw on other institutes within California. There are, in fact, 12 different there are eight institutes. There are four centers of excellence in the state, also funded by CIRM, that they can draw on. And the slide wasn't big enough to show those collaborations. But what you have here is a really unique culture that allows for the maximum leverage of philanthropic dollars. And certainly Denny Sanford's tremendous contributions to the Stem Cell Institute and the Translational Center have really leveraged off of an infrastructure here that is unique in the world. It is world class. I, in fact, say it's the finest in the world. So it is a remarkable collaboration between state funding and the philanthropic champions here. As background, I would say that it is significant validation when you have 15 countries that have reviewed the structure and the achievements and joined with their funding. I would also like to point out to you, though, that there is a very specific structure here, I think, that lifts this funding in a remarkable way. And that is that by using a general obligation bond issue, what happens in funding research is that you're able to amortize the cost of the research over the generations that benefit. If you think about polio from the late 1950s, at that time the projection was that by 2005 it was supposed to cost $100 billion a year just to maintain people in iron lungs around the country. That $100 billion a year was eliminated because of an early investment in the intellectual capital infrastructure that produced a vaccine. The stem cell initiative is an investment that is intended to have decades of benefit. So if you're going to get critical massing of capital to work with these champion philanthropists, you can't put it all on the taxpayers day one because they're not the only group benefiting. It is generations who will benefit. So we have a strong level of support in California continuing because the public knows while they're paying for this that this is being spread over their families' families, and a broad scope of individuals who will benefit. And maintaining this state support is very important. We are now in a stage of reporting back to the public so they understand what they've achieved. There's 2,000 peer-reviewed discovery publications. They're now proceeding at a little bit better than one every other day, and there are now 29 human trials. About 8 of them has been completed. There are approximately 14 or 15 that are currently in progress, and there's about 6 trials that are supposed to be approved in the next 6 months that are already submitted to the FDA with very favorable feedback. So we have clear, very solid milestones of progress without going into the development candidates that where there's an extraordinary number across the disease spectrum. We have an obligation to report back to the public and let them understand what they have achieved. It is remarkable, too, to understand that it is an ecosystem like San Diego that has allowed us to move through to human trials so quickly. We were tied up with litigation after the election, 7 million votes wasn't enough for the opposition. So we were in litigation from 2005 to the summer of 2007. I had to go through the state Supreme Court to get it operational. So it's really in 7 full years of funding that have occurred that you've made this tremendous progress. And it is important, really, for the public to understand so that they continue to provide the support for further funding in the future. Very quickly, I would like to say that it is not just that the infrastructure is in place and you see these collaborations. They are really effective. Just to point out, on the left, on the top left, in one of these collaborations with Canada, Katrina Jameson and Dr. Katrina Jameson and Dr. Carlson from the Moore Cancer Center at UC San Diego, along with John Dick at University Health Network Toronto, Ontario, who discovered cancer stem cells. This one collaboration has led to 2 human trials with 2 other candidate trials on their way, hopefully that are developed soon. Half of those that I just mentioned are of the trials are not in our 29 member count because the trials that are taking place in the foreign countries are booked on a different ledger. But this is a global collaboration that San Diego has undertaken with tremendous success and power. From a philanthropic viewpoint for this conference, if you look at impact investing and you understand that you have this phenomenal infrastructure in place, if you understand the track record that has been proven, if you understand the collaborative culture, unlike many areas in the world where you have a dominant competitive culture, certainly these individuals are competitive, but they are dedicated collaboratively to the mission of reaching a patient. That is the dominant distinction of this unique culture. If all of those elements are in place and proven, the leverage that new philanthropic dollars can get here may be multiple times what it can be any place else in the world for the stem cell revolution, which promises to reduce human suffering, to mitigate disease. In 4 years, Mahendra Rao, who is a phenomenal scientist who's here today, nobly took on trying to reform the NIH to get to human trials for stem cells with the NIH. In 4 years, that bureaucracy would only move to fund 1 stem cell trial. 29 in California, 1 through the NIH. It is remarkable what can be achieved here. I would hope that the philanthropists who are in this audience, champions in their own rights, in their own areas, will recognize an opportunity unprecedented in human history to lift a revolution underway with real results in a unique ecoculture with extraordinary champions that have led to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. That was a great introduction, and thank you also for Proposition 71 and the son of Proposition 71, which we hope will be coming up to. We wouldn't be here today if we didn't have really Bob's leadership. Next, I'd like to you saw the diagram that Bob put up was one I hadn't seen before until you prepared it for this conference, that this really is a unique organization that we have in San Diego. I think it takes, though, herding cats to another level, maybe herding turtles as well. It's been an extraordinary effort to bring all of this together. And this would not have happened, the consortium concept would not have happened without strong leadership from our local community. And next, I'd like to ask Malin Burnham and Erwin Jacobs, who were here in the very beginning, if you could share with the audience a little bit about how all of this came about, because it didn't just happen from nothing.
I think we can just sit here. Let me just give you a little bit of my own background. Did found Qualcomm and obviously worked in the mobile phone space, the mobile computing, very powerful device space. And we fairly early began to realize that there would be applications in the medical area, mobile health, telemedicine. And I think perhaps around 2002 began to work in that area, and that's expanded. There's now a subsidiary that has spun out called Qualcomm Life, and lots of investments now building up in the venture area because obviously there's just lots of good ideas out there and a lot of good things that are happening. On Prop 71, began to hear about that fairly early on, was able to provide some support for gathering all those signatures and getting the right levels of publicity, and luckily it passed in a very healthy way, and you can see that Bob is a very good explainer of the great advantages of the proposition. However, he also mentioned that partway along, there were lawsuits, and that delayed the funding. And so Bob came by and said that we could get some of the research programs going if we could provide some early funding philanthropically or on loan, and that should it ever get cleared and the bond issues go through, that could then be expanded upon. So became very much involved in the early progress, and so that was exciting. Then I retired from Qualcomm as CEO in 2005 and almost immediately became chairman of the Salk Institute, figuring that this was an opportunity to learn a lot more about what's happened in biology and perhaps be able to play some small role in being able to move ahead. And that indeed has turned out to be very exciting. A lot of very good things happening at Salk. But interestingly, one of the early issues that I had to deal with was the issue of setting up this consortium. And of the initially four institutions to come together for stem cell research. Luckily, most of the scientists were very much in favor of this opportunity to have a even more collaborative atmosphere. There's a lot of collaboration, as has been mentioned, here in San Diego. It's perhaps one of the hallmarks of the area. And so scientists were very excited. But, of course, if you have four independent institutions, each having to go out and raise its own monies, each having their own scientists and selecting their own scientists and special ways for that particular institution, there's a question, how do you put together a group and make that function effectively? And there was a bit of controversy on the board at the time I took over to whether to proceed or not. But we were able to have a variety of meetings on how we would proceed, how we could protect each of the individual institutions, in the sense that each one is working, the scientists remain with their institution, the consortium provides a home, a place with a lot of services, lots of support for the scientists and for the institutions, but each institution remain independent. And with that kind of discussion, explanation, we were able to go ahead and get the board approval, move ahead. And I think that right now there's just no controversy whatsoever that things have indeed worked out in a very positive fashion. There was some concern when we started to consider building the building, and Denny came through with a marvelous donation to help make that happen. But whether we're overbuilding or how much space might be needed, how might we make use of that space going forward, and that has never been an issue since. I think we need more space at this point. And so things have just been moving in the right direction. And so it's been very exciting to watch the work that's going on, now see some of the work move to a clinical trials, and I think out into the general public. So making the effort to get this started has turned out to be something that I think has been both personally exciting, but I think for all the institutions involved, been very exciting.
Well, let me add to that. Thank you, Irwin. A lot of things happen by luck and circumstances and even accident. As you saw the cobweb of organizations circling around the Sanford Consortium on the screen, reminds me that that was something that I never anticipated, for sure. Another accident of luck, perhaps, when Bob Klein was gearing up a campaign to pass Prop 71, I think he looked into his Rolodex under San Diego and found somebody that was also in the real estate industry, and that was me. And that's how I got involved. And so it's been a great ride ever since, I can tell you. So let me explain a little bit more about another way of these five organizations now have come together. As Irwin said, four initially, and then the La Jolla Institute has come aboard in the last 3 years. San Diego has been described differently by different people, of course. We're either a large, small city or a small, large city. But what has really happened and allowed us to come together is the DNA of the high-tech and the medical research world in San Diego. The DNA is very strong, close collaboration, more so than anywhere else that I know of in the world, which I don't know everything in the world, but when I think of the San Francisco Bay Area and the Boston area, they got great institutions and so on and so forth, but they don't have the closeness and the DNA. In this case, with the first four, you can walk from one to the other, or at least bicycle from one to the other. And that makes a big difference when you're putting these organizations together. Because I'm a big believer, always have been, that collaboration is in science, in innovation, has a lot to do with advances that are initiated around the coffee pot or the water cooler. And that went into the design of our new building. Four stories. It's rectangular in shape with two long aisleways going down each floor. So you got three banks of laboratories. If you stand outside and look, you can look through the whole building. So when George is working on something and he looks over and sees Sally, oh, I've got to go talk to her right now, instead of putting it up here and maybe forgetting about it tomorrow or the next day. And so, anyway, I'm a big believer and a fan of that type of thing, and that's been part of the concept that we use to put this whole thing together, and it's working.
Thank you, Irwin and Malin. As someone who was sort of on the ground, and when this got started, I was the vice chancellor at UCSD at the time, Irwin made a very, I think, several important points. One was the scientists wanted to do this. There was no question that they wanted in the beginning, but some of us who might be leading institutions at the time didn't quite see the wisdom of this. And I think if you're thinking about doing something like this in your own community, without these community leaders who brought all of us together, it wouldn't have happened. So that it really does take the community leaders along with the scientists to pull this off. Another absolutely critical thing that made this possible is if it hadn't been for the lead and founding gift from Denny Sanford that made this all really get going, we wouldn't be here talking about this. And Denny, I wonder if we might ask you to share what made you get interested in us and why are you doing this? And thank God you are, but maybe you would share it with the audience.
Well, my first involvement with medical research was a children's center that we put on the campus at Sanford, what was then Burnham, now is Sanford Burnham organization, for particularly rare diseases, and that has worked out very well. Within the past few years, I've held five little tykes on my lap that whose lives were saved because of that work. Well, that was my initial program, and then along came the best pickpocket in the world, who happens to be sitting right next to me. I mean, absolutely a master at pickpocketing. And so he got me involved, explained what was happening, and it is such a unique program that we've joined five major medical research organizations together in the same building, all sharing, all opening their shirts and saying, okay, this is where I'm at, this is where I'm, I'm going, and so on and so forth. Within the same building, these glass walls really add to it. Larry termed the organization a collaboratory, but there's nothing like this anywhere in the world. And the work that Bob Klein did in putting it together initially through the states for funding on a significant basis, $3 billion, and there still happens to be a little bit left in that kitty. We're now talking about maybe going out for additional funding from the state at sometime in the future, currently undetermined. But it is so unique. I mean, how could I not invest in it? There's not going to be, in all likelihood, another Jonas Salk, one individual that really comes up with a great discovery. It's going to have to be collaboration. If not within the same organization, within multiple organizations working together. We have really the best of all worlds, and everyone enjoys being a part of that, that has signed on as a member of that organization. So I couldn't be more thrilled. One of the best investments I've ever made. So.
Let me just add one little comment here. Under Prop 71, 10% of that $3 billion was designated for brick and mortar. And to put a grant application in, as we did, we had to also have 20% of whatever grant was made to us, we had to have another 20% in philanthropy dollars on top of that. And so it was well designed by Bob and his team. And the results have shown.
Yeah, I just like to say they understate their contribution. So the state ended up, the competition was so significant around the state, San Diego ended up putting approximately two-thirds of all the money in. The state put a third of all the money in. And thank you, Denny, for your vision and leadership and Malin and Irwin's guidance. And I also like to say before we go on to the next speakers, if I could, we need to understand the moderator, Dr. Ed Holmes, was on the original board and really led us through the tough bylaws and ethics and scientific grant process. Tremendous contribution intellectually to what the agency became. And Larry Goldstein, who's at the other end of this table, was the scientific co-chair advising me as the chairman of the campaign. So that initiative, when I wrote it in 2003, every single line had to pass the scientific test of Larry and Irv Weissman. And Larry has put phenomenal energy into making this initiative what it is. So the people in this room really drove this initiative statewide, and I think that needs to be understood.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. Maybe before we move to the next topic, Larry, we've talked what the consortium is in the sense of it being a multi-institutional entity that brings together all of these fantastic organizations in a totally unique way. But it's also multidisciplinary. Another characteristic which I think makes it very unique, and as our lead scientist, Larry, and someone who helped to recruit the people who are now living in that building, maybe you could give the audience just a feel for what the multidisciplinary nature of the place is, because that's unusual.
Sure. Thank you, Ed. So I just want to echo what the previous speaker said, first of all, which is there is a unique culture in San Diego that doesn't exist in other academic homes around the country. I lived at Harvard for a number of years. I was a tenured professor. And I can tell you that you live in a silo when you live in a traditional academic institution, whereas in San Diego, you don't live in a silo. And if you think about it, that's what you need for interdisciplinary research. A biologist needs to be able to talk to an engineer or a chemist or a physicist about how to make progress on a problem. And the thing you have to remember about the problems we face in medicine is that the easy ones are done. The problems we now face with degenerative diseases of the brain, such as Alzheimer's, of the pancreas, such as diabetes, and all the other organ systems, these problems, each one, is a terribly difficult problem. And it requires us to work together, not just as biologists working together, but to work together with engineers, physicists, mathematicians, to find clinical solutions to the diseases that plague all of us. And the consortium was set up in such a way that that interdisciplinarity is as natural as breathing. We have folks from all of these major disciplines in our building. In addition to the five different academic institutions, we have four different schools from within UCSD, including engineering, pharmacy, health sciences, biological sciences, and chemistry. And we have faculty with labs from 12 or 13 different departments around the university. And we all speak a common language of science and medicine, and we're all united by the goal of trying to conquer these diseases that afflict us. And we all know that we have to work together to do it. And so my friends here on the panel have helped create the environment within which we can work productively, and as we'll touch on later, will allow us to cross the valley of death and bring good ideas to fruition in the clinic. So I'll send it back to you, Ed.
Thanks, Larry. Maybe I could get the panel collectively to reflect a little bit. Bob Klein in his remarks alluded to this, that this wasn't an easy process from lots of different levels. We had legal battles. We had raptor battles. We had hang glider battles. We've had lots of difficulties in making this come to pass. And so it might be interesting for the audience to hear a little bit about some of the challenges we faced along the way, and maybe if everyone would just sort of chime in as they see fit. Bob, you could talk, I'm sure, about this at length, but maybe at least some of the legal things. We all got to be deposed, and it was great fun back in those days.
Right. So, although 59% of the California public voted for this initiative, and that's a challenge in itself because it was number 71 on the ballot, so you had to go through all the electoral positions down to the bottom of the ballot, to number 71. The 7 million votes we had were the highest in the history of the state of California for any initiative of any kind, and they were the same number as Senator Feinstein, which was that greatest number of votes at that time for any U.S. senator in the history of the country. So the public was really deeply engaged. And I would point out that one of the benefits of an initiative is that there's a participatory education when people sign an initiative. It's part of the design of this whole system. Educate people through the election. It's not just a vote. It's an educational process. When you've signed on the ballot, your mind is open to new ideas, to looking at the evidence. And we immediately, people thought we were crazy, went on television with scientists on television talking about it in measured term, controlling expectations, but talking about the potential. So we went through a $35 million media campaign in this state to educate the public. And so when a group from Colorado, right after the election, came in, incorporated in the state in order to sue us on because of religious issues over it, the public stayed with us. And in fact, the judiciary understood the importance because of the great mandate that we had an expedited treatment. Proposition 5 for early childhood education had passed a number of years before, took them 4.5 years in court, took us 2 years. Superior Court, Court of Appeals, State Supreme Court, 2 years in and out. It's a commitment of the people of the state and an understanding of the mandate the public had provided. So the initiative process provides a fundamental deep base of understanding and a commitment to medical research and science, which is really broadly lacking in the country, but present in California and extraordinarily present in San Diego.
Let me add another thing that I guess because I was one of the first ones that Bob contacted here in San Diego. At that time, I was, I believe, still the chairman of the then Burnham Institute before we met Denny. Politically, I've always known, learned, or been told, whatever, that nonprofits don't get involved in things like this, in endorsements. And I said, fooey on that. I said, this is too important. And I convinced our board of trustees early on to come public and endorse Prop 71. And I was walking on eggs a little bit, but it worked. And Bob since has told me that we were the first nonprofit in California to do so. So every once in a while, I guess you have to take a chance, take a little risk. But if it's in your DNA, do it.
Let me just add one last point about the politics of this. So this is actually bipartisan. It's neither Republican nor Democrat. Republicans and Democrats both get sick with terrible illnesses. And if you look at the electoral map of Prop 71's passage, districts that were heavily Democrat and heavily Republican both voted in favor of passage of this initiative. And in fact, it wasn't just a single party supporting it ultimately. It was both.
It was both, but recognizing that the Republican support in California was very different from the Bush administration's position in Washington at the time, which, of course, constrained the research. And if we were going to have a substitute national program, California was the obvious selection.
Yeah, which is actually interesting because you see a lot of this happening now, where the federal government, for one reason or another, is not able to move ahead and support some causes. And so the states actually are providing kind of the experimental approach, trying different things that are somewhat controversial still, but then can establish themselves and move out. And certainly the stem cell effort was a major example of that.
The result of this thus far has found its way into new organization. Larry, describe what we're doing in the human clinical area, or why don't you? Larry's pretty well heading that.
They didn't want to introduce.
No, I don't need to. That's why I work for Denny. He really was the perfect lead into this. The segue to after the Sanford Consortium, which is a more basic science group, even though it brings together clinicians, basic scientists, engineers, informatics, genomics, all of these people, there was a recognition on Denny's part, I think, that for us to carry our mission into the clinic, which is where we want to go, that we don't want to cure cancer just in the mouse, we want to get to people. And there's a big gap to get there. And I was thinking, Denny, we might get you to kick this off as to, again, what motivated you? You said a little bit before, but we wouldn't have the Sanford Stem Cell Clinic if it weren't for you. Larry can tell us as a director. And Irwin, I think it ties into the Jacobs Medical Center that we're going to have space in the Jacobs Medical Center to do this. So it's a combination of Denny and Irwin and Larry's, I think, vision in organizing this. So maybe, Denny, if you would say a little bit about what prompted you to get into this.
Well, first off, there's a great new medical facility taking place on the Mesa here. I think we call it on the Mesa, over on the freeway, that the Jacobs family is supporting, a great new hospital. And I found out that sitting next to that, actually a part of the parking lot, could be used for an additional building. And we put our heads together and said, okay, let's move this out of the mouse world, as Ed says, and into humans. And this is a great new opportunity. UCSD provided the space or the land for it, and they needed some funding. They are continuing. They're a big part of the investor, along with me, to make it happen. So, Larry, give them a little more information, if you would, on that facility and also our current tests.
Okay, great. So I will start off with Danny saying, enough with the mice already. We've cured cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, and everything else in the mouse. And you know, it's such a cliche that it's almost a joke, but it's actually true. The fact of the matter is that we humans are not just big mice, and therapies that work in small rodents don't necessarily work the same way. And so you've got to cross the bridge from the basic science through the translation and into clinical trials. And this is what Denny and other community leaders have helped us do, to build a pipeline that runs all the way from the basic science now to clinical trials in patients. And so in our first year of operation, not only did we bring down significant new grant funding in the form of an alpha clinic from CIRM, but we also launched three new clinical trials in collaboration with either academic partners or industrial partners. One is a trial of what's called an antibody that seeks out and destroys so-called cancer stem cells, deranged stem cells in one form of leukemia. A second trial that we have up and running is in collaboration with a company called NeuralStem, where stem cells that can fill in damaged regions of the spinal cord in experimental animals are now being tested in humans with damaged spinal cords. We've transplanted our first few patients, and we're waiting to see what happens. And then the final trial we launched in our first year is in collaboration with a company called Viacyte. I know Paul Lakin is in the audience today, and he may have told you about this or will tell you about this. And in essence, it's a biological version of an artificial pancreas. It's a hybrid bioengineering biology device that's implanted under the skin in type 1 diabetics who lack their own pancreatic function. And again, if you're a mouse, you can function with one of these artificial human pancreases, and now we're testing this in humans. So that was our first year of operation, and I'll just say watch this space, because we're working now on our second year of operation to look at our next batch of trials. And I think the philosophy all the way through, and I think this is important for philanthropists and investors, is to remember that we talk a lot about the valley of death in between a really good idea and a clinical trial to test validity, safety, and effect. And what we're doing with these organizations, and in particular with the Sanford Stem Cell Clinical Center, with the help of my friend Denny Sanford, is to live in the valley of death and help these great ideas through. Many of them are now great opportunities for investors and philanthropists who want to help us bring the next generation of medicine to human patients. So with that, Ed?
Well, I would really, Larry, characterize San Diego differently. I see San Diego as the bridge over the valley of death. And the bridge is in place and functioning and delivering for patients.
Thank you, Bob, for that. But maybe I could get you, Larry, to say a word, because I think, Denny, if I understood correctly, that the Sanford Stem Cell Clinic is located at UC San Diego Medical School because they have a clinical enterprise there, and I want to come back to that in a moment, to Irwin. But the thing that I think is really clever about this is that this is open to all of us who work in the Sanford Consortium. And Larry, you might just mention how we can all gain access to this while it's located at UCSD. It's really another one of these examples of the community working together, of how you envision us all getting in there.
Thank you, Ed. So I know that I don't have the lock on all great projects. We have to go out and look for good things to bring in and help over the valley of death, as Bob put it. And we've used two different mechanisms. One is, by virtue of where I sit in the Sanford Consortium, I do know a lot of scientists around San Diego, around the world, and in industry and academia. And so I can identify projects that may be ready to bring in. And second, we are sending out annual calls for good ideas broadly. And we're completely agnostic on where a good project or a good idea comes from. I think one of the ways I think about us is that in addition to being a bridge, we're also a funnel. looking for lots of good ideas that we can bring in to a few well-selected clinical trials that we then help because we think that they have the opportunity for maximal impact. And at the clinical center, we don't care if it comes from UCSD or TSRI or Salk or a company. We just want to get good ideas into human clinical trials to maximize impact.
Right. Erwin, might I get you to say a word about the Jacobs Medical Center, because I think that this fantastic clinical facility, which is going up at UCSD, you envision some of it would include clinical research, I think, in your original vision for that. And I think a few words for the audience about that would be really helpful.
Right. Well, actually, I came here to San Diego back in 1966 when the university was really just getting off the ground. And talking about the ground, I think a year or so later, broke ground for the medical school. And so I've been watching the progress of the UCSD Medical School over many years now, and it started with a major focus on research and on bringing in all the various departments from the university, and I think that's helped it grow and become very effective in looking at research and bringing that into the clinic very quickly. And so a few years ago, we were exposed to an idea that would allow basically three new pavilions to be put in a tower, a medical center, and allow a lot of this work to proceed at a much faster pace. And so that got us very interested, and we then did offer to provide the funding and also to set up a advisory committee, one function of which was to focus on bringing technology, making that available early on in the hospital, in trying to expedite research that's going on around the area, around the world, of course, but in particular around San Diego, bring that in very, very quickly, and to make sure that there was good cooperation among the various departments at the university and the institutions around UCSD and in the consortium to bring new work in. So that's all worked out exceedingly positively. One other item, which is kind of interesting, that there's been more and more discussion of monitoring patients after they leave the hospital to prevent that high percentage, 20% or whatever, that have to return in a fairly short while. So providing monitoring, and that involves some telemedicine, some equipment. And so one of the things that is being provided in the center is a room to kind of train the patients on the way out as to what types of monitors they might end up being, might end up working with. So very pleased that this whole thing has worked very well with Denny's ideas on helping expedite the stem cell research into the hospital, into the clinic, and that space was available early on to help that along.
So one thing we haven't focused on is that the state agency can fund private companies as well on loan programs where there's, if it's effective, there's a multiple payback on the loan to the state agency for more research. And so the Viacyte trial for type 1 diabetes, it's very exciting to all of us, using Indoderm that is derived from embryonic stem cells and it's encapsulated and implanted in the body in a current phase 1 trial. It matures in vivo into islet cells. That is funded by local philanthropists and investors into the company. It is funded by JDRF International, and it is funded by the state agency. And that trial is taking place through the Alpha Clinic that is part of the UC system that you saw up on the screen. So the private sector is brought in here as well. The intent here is to leverage all resources possible in this collaboration, private sector being a very important part of this. And in terms of leveraging resources, I would also say for this model and any models that you're looking at, 5 weeks after the election, we had the National Academy of Sciences in the United States, who convened for me in UC Irvine the best stem cell scientist and ethicist in the country to give us recommendations on ethical guidelines, grant processes, conflicts of interest issues. Dr. Holmes was there participating as a dean of the medical school. Other deans of medical schools and Larry Goldstein, of course, was there as one of our key scientific leaders, as our joint chair of the Scientific Advisory Committee. But look at all the resources that are there. Incorporate them. It's part of a collaborative model, not duplicating knowledge, but incorporating the best knowledge the world has to offer in advancing and meeting our mandate to patients.
Bob, picking up on that, maybe worth just saying another, I think, almost unanticipated thing that's come out of this is that the Sanford Consortium, by pulling together these five institutions and all the partnerships, is now becoming a magnet for we will soon be making a public announcement with a multinational pharmaceutical company that has said, this is one of the few places where we can come and get a lot of basic science at a multidisciplinary that pulls right into the clinic and is enabling us at the Sanford Consortium to partner much more closely with our colleagues in industry in bringing this science into the clinic. So there are a number of ramifications of this that I think will be fun to watch in the future. What I'd like to do at this point, because I want to save some time for questions and comments from the audience, but there's one final topic that Mail and I could get you to kick off for us, which is that I think hopefully the panel has been able to illustrate to you today how absolutely critical the philanthropic support from our community and outside our community has been so important to launching this exciting program that the Sanford Consortium represents with all of its partner institutions. But how do we do this going forward? How do we continue the momentum we have now? What sort of new things can we be thinking about? Because I don't think we can just rest on our laurels. So maybe, Malin, you could kick that off, and then we'll open it up to the audience for comments and questions.
Well, thank you. This fits into my vocabulary. I think the future is a lot more important than the past. And with Serum, the three Prop 71, $3 billion, all but a little over, I think, $500 million has been committed. So we're getting to the point where we're coming up to the cliff. And that's a bigger job than I want to talk about now. But Bob and I have been talking, and he's been talking to a lot of people, where do we go with the Serum 2.0? Go back to the ballot box sometime? Well, whenever it is, it's going to be out in the future, 1 or 2 or maybe 3 years. I don't know. But that inspired me to think when I met the Cavendish leadership, why not think in terms of having maybe an exclusive fund with the Cavendish families and the Sanford Consortium? Because we've got a lot of research going on, and if the Serum funding stops, what do these people do? What happens to the research? It'd be criminal to let it go to waste. So one of the things that I'm not proposing anything, but we're talking to the Cavendish leadership, and we will continue to do that. Maybe we could set up a fund, as I said, for the consortium. It could be exclusive. With both sides, there are, as you know, most of you, I'm sure, evergreen funds where there's some kind of a return that pays back to the philanthropic donors, and then there's a relatively new program that called a program investment fund or PRI, where. As I understand it, and I'm not, this is out of my field of expertise for sure, but where a philanthropic organization in this country, 501c3, could make a quasi investment, which is would be part philanthropy and part investment. So I've asked Larry and one of the other colleagues in the Sanford Consortium. What is the volume in San Diego, both in the consortium and in the five-member organizations? What is the volume today in grant revenues for stem cell work? And it's about $100 million a year. So I'm sort of thinking in terms that maybe we could design, a $500 million fund that you would probably take down in tranches, like $100 million at a time, for specific projects within this body of expertise that we have here. And so that will be our way, at least, of bridging this valley of death right here in San Diego for our own needs. And, Bob, maybe it could be even expanded further. I don't know if that's – you and I haven't talked about this specific one, but I think it has a lot of promise for a lot of people in this room and elsewhere.
Well, the key for here for San Diego is the really historic opportunity in a great medical revolution in the history of the world in stem cells to take massive investment that's been done to bring not just the therapies into human trials, but for every therapies in a human trial, you have five that are in later stage developmental candidates where you have the infrastructure, the ecosystem is in place, it's world class, it has this collaborative culture that's unmatched. And at this moment, you have this tremendous opportunity with the last dollars in to run the last tactical mile with a fund like you're describing to bring it from that point through the phase one, phase two human clinical trials to where biotech or pharma will pick it up. We've got to get over that bridge. We've got so many disease candidates that are at that edge of that valley of death. The bridge is there. We need the last dollars to get across it. Your fund would provide incredible leverage in terms of the San Diego opportunities.
And be open, obviously, to the Cavendish family for their specific desires on given diseases.
Right.
Maybe this would be a good juncture if we could bring the house lights up so we could see you guys. It's rather blinding from here. Now, we would really like to engage you either on the last topic or anything that the panel has discussed that we'd like to have your comments or questions. And please go ahead. Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So this is just fantastic.
Would you identify yourself just so the I think that we're recording this. And
yeah. Jim Prudent. I start biotech companies in the Midwest, so we don't have the type of philanthropy. But it's amazing to me that guys that don't really have a science background have supported something that is just as a scientist, stem cell research in Wisconsin was huge, and you guys just killed us. This is just amazing. But there's other areas of science, and I can come up with one that I know a little about called autophagy, which is very similar to what you guys are doing here, but there's no money and there's no structure for it. It's very diverse around the country of all the people that are working on it. This process is how we clean our cells, and you had mentioned that we're not 70-kilogram mice, and you know there's so many reasons why we're not, but one is we live longer. We have to clean shop, and this autophagy field is just absolutely fascinating. It's involved in almost every disease we know. How would you guys suggest putting something like this together for other types of incredible science programs that could bring people together a little better than the way it is now where we're all over the world?
Bob Klein is kind of the master of this and a proven entity. I would suggest you start talking with him and see what, you know, what might be developed from the Twin Cities. I'd like to see something up there myself.
So just two points. One is we should tell you that on this panel we do have some tremendous scientific background besides Larry Goldstein Dr. Irwin Jacobs was actually president of the National Academy Academy of Engineers, of engineering for the United States. And so he brings all of that background from the National Academy experience to the tremendously complex integration of science and technology in this venture, which is another unusual, unique asset of this collaboration. But in terms of driving communities to come together, I would say one unique characteristic of a bond issue, whether it's a private bond issue that's put together among philanthropists or a public bond issue, is it's a unitary decision. The history, unfortunately, of patient advocacy in the United States is one that's fractionalized because everyone lobbies for their own disease, which splits and splinters the community's strength and the philanthropic backing for a mainstream driver of new fields. So that if you have a unitary decision, you either are behind the bond or you're not, you're committing, of course, to the fact that the bond is going to go to the best science, which it should, to lift everyone and advance science. I mean, there was research years ago for pancreatic cancer, didn't help pancreatic cancer, tremendous insight for type 1 diabetes. And you have to bet on the best science if we're going to really advance the patient's causes for chronic disease. But look at the funding structure, because the funding structure, you need critical mass, number one, to attract and pull together philanthropists. I mean, philanthropists in this community were extraordinary because they were out leading this and creating the infrastructure. But there's a whole other level of philanthropy. There's another $1 billion outside of San Diego that's come in matching funds in California for the Stem Cell Initiative because critical mass of funding was there. So they know there's enough money to take it, not just through basic research to developmental candidates, but to take it through phase one and phase two trials. That's critical. But number two, you need to pull everyone together where they have a common interest and there's a large enough funding program with enough years that there's a reasonable progress that can be made across the portfolio.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of this that has been described today, that you've been witness to outside this session, has grown very rapidly. It all really started about 1960 with the UCSD being formed, and Salk Institute turned out also that same year. And so things have just moved very, very rapidly. So it's important, I think, to have a research university and hopefully a research university with a medical school and one that's focused on research or on bringing that research to the clinic. And so those are kind of seeds that you need to get started. It helps also if then there is some industry that's in a rapidly growing phase that is interested also then in providing support, industrial and then hopefully enriching people enough to be able to provide additional philanthropic. So you can't start these things, I think, all at once, although if you can get a statewide bond issue, that, of course, is a wonderful step ahead. But you try to build these around institutions that have great quality and themselves are in a period of growth.
And you have to think continually. Collaboration, collaboration, collaboration. Never stop.
If I could add to that, I was, as I mentioned earlier, was at UCSD and was on the ground when this began. And to the question, I think we had a compelling idea, stem cells, that we thought were very important. We were fortunate that we had resources from two dimensions. One was the CIRM state money, and the other was a strong philanthropy from Denny and that made this possible. We had a critical mass of scientists who wanted to work together. And I would say that you can find some of that in other communities. The thing that made this absolutely unique, the guys that are sitting on the panel, having been one of the people on the ground, I don't think we would have come together without strong community leadership from Irwin and Malin and Denny and John Morris back in those days who really wanted to see this happen. And they encouraged us when we sometime got off the reservation a little bit about how to get back together. So to me, that's a critical ingredient if you want to put something like this together. Bob, then maybe we'll get another question.
Beyond stem cells, I'd just like to mention there are members here, some of whom I've met, who are interested in underdeveloped countries and disease issues that are unique to those or still prominent diseases in those areas with resistance to current therapies. In 2006, Gordon Brown, then Chancellor of the Exchequer, and Bill Gates got together and they copied the Bonn model. And in 2006, they went to the World Bank and said, we want to have a critical mass of funds to address the eradication of tuberculosis and other diseases that are so dominant in sub-Sahara Africa, among other targets. And they put together eight countries who individually committed for 20 years a stream of revenue to service over $5 billion in bonds, which were then sold and funded that effort to eradicate primarily to tuberculosis. It's called the International Finance Facility for Immunizations. So the models that we're talking about, think broadly, can be used outside of the form and the state government of any one country.
Maybe we'll get another question or two. I think we have until 10:45. Is that right, Catherine? Okay. I see someone standing. Yes, he's got a microphone.
So I'm Charles Yeomans. I run a biotech in the Bay Area called Trigemina, and we focus on migraine. But one of the things that I found is correctly you're focusing on is the valley of death, which I think affects a lot of companies, most companies that try to move up past into the clinic. And one of the things that strikes me is in meeting a lot of people and talking around is that it isn't necessarily the case that the Darwinism that affects these, that allows companies, some companies to move on and other companies to die, isn't necessarily based on the science, it's based on how well the management is at raising money, which a lot of times is the same, but sometimes it isn't. So one of the things that I think is really important is something like the fund you're talking about, but also while I was here, I talked to someone from Maryland, and they have an interesting initiative, which is Maryland will kick back 50% of whatever a private investor invests in a startup in biotech. And the consequence of that is anybody who's puts up $100,000 or something just automatically gets $50,000 back, and they keep their investment, and it's a tax-free rebate. So something like that is extremely broad-based, and I was just wondering if the panel had thoughts on initiatives like that or just something statewide that really encourages, because I'll tell you, I go to bio and all these other big conferences. The other states are always pounding on you to move there, and California really doesn't do much of that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's important to realize Prop 71 passed in 2004 when the state was basically insolvent. They had to sell $15 billion of bonds in April to pay the Highway Patrol, the Harbor Police. This is a funding mechanism very different from the appropriation mechanism you just referenced where they, in real time, return capital up front. Amortizing it over the generations that benefit really allow a state to go through tough times and still keep a very high critical mass of capital funded up front. The problem is that you're not going to, I don't think, commonly see the kind of program you're talking about in California because we're too recent in our memory is when times were tough for the state budget. Maryland happens to be a collaborative partner with California, along with Connecticut and some other states, in funding, where they leverage their funding with California. I would suggest that one of the best models is the province of Ontario in Canada that in terms of new startup companies getting assistance, where they do give substantial tax credits and loans. And those loans are based upon milestones of performance and other good accountability measures. But it's very difficult for state governments in the current environment in the United States to be able to provide assistance. It's difficult enough for the federal government to provide meaningfully assistance, and they're not assisting companies. And companies are critical to this ecosystem. So that's why CIRM does these loans programs. But you can also look, there is a program in Ohio called the First Frontier Second. They've been through the Third Frontier. They use bonds now to fund company startups across technology, including biotech, where they do some of this, but it's bond funded. That's where they're getting the money.
Maybe we could get another question or two in the last few minutes that we have. Again, I can't see, but are there somebody over here? Yes.
Hello, I'm Michael Redman. I'm a CEO of a biotechnology company focused in cancer in Houston, Texas. Shortly thereafter, Proposition 71, the Cancer Prevention Research Institute of Texas, also had a $3 billion bond. I know it's much different, but maybe if you could compare the two, and how can other states learn that they could also follow your leadership?
Yeah, right after the California bond issue, I privileged to testify before the Texas legislature, but the legislature in Texas did something very different when they backed the initiative in Texas. Whereas the California initiative sets up a 29-member governing board that is independent of the legislature to isolate science from political pressure. In Texas, even though the public approved an initiative for $3 billion, every year they have to go back to the legislature to authorize what amount will be allowed to be sold as bonds. And ironically, during 2008 and 2009, right when theirs was starting up, the legislature cut them back. Those bonds could have helped lift biotech through the bad recession that Texas went through with everyone else. Texas, it wasn't quite as bad as in California, but they didn't. And there have been problems with political pressure on the from the legislature that hopefully have now been partially solved in Texas, that led to some scientific grant decisions that weren't, let's say, totally scientific. So I think it is very important when you set up any authority with a bond, make sure that peer review and the governing board with scientists and patient advocates are making the decision. Don't create a structure that is open to political pressure, certainly not annually. But Texas now has, I think, a much better functioning agency driving $3 billion in cancer through their system, leveraging their resources and their philanthropy. There are several more states that are looking at the model.
Anyone else? Larry?
Yeah, I want to highlight something that Bob said that I think is very important that makes the California initiative so important, and that is, in medical research, when you're testing therapies for disease, you need effectively to do clinical trials, that is, therapy experiments that last 2 to 5 years. And so there needs to be a sustained attention span and financing that's multi-year with an investment partner or philanthropist or a state agency that can have the ability to take the long view and to reap a return on investment that takes 5 to 10 years, because that's the legitimate length of experiments. 5 year survival in cancer is a number we often use. It takes 2 to 5 years to test a therapy for multiple sclerosis or Alzheimer's disease. Those are the facts of how you do medical research. We know that they have very strong, long-term, high return on investment, but you have to have a multi-year funding system in order to make those trials a reality.
I think we have time, Alex, for one more question, maybe.
Hi. I'm Barry Didotto. I am Chief Investment Officer of the Innovation Institute. We're in Newport Beach, California, and we serve nonprofits. I wanted to ask a question relative to the UC system. We've tried on a number of occasions, a few times unsuccessfully, to help out institutions that are trying to push IP out from the UC system into the private sector, where we could help them advance cures. This relates to pediatrics and others. And they've been very frustrated that they can't get this through the UC system fast. And we've been there to help them, but they can't do it. And so the administrators say, our hands are tied. We can't do that. And I think that if through a bond issue or something like that, where you can package this so that whether it's private investors or others can help bring those things out faster, we could help advance and amplify the impacts for any number of solutions out there. So if you have any thoughts, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. First of all, in California, under CIRM, California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, the funding agencies, policies, there's a research commons. So as long as you're using the IP for research, anyone in California, any scientist, can use that that research. And in fact, the person publishing needs to make that biologic available, if it's a biologic available from a some source at cost for anyone within California. This should be a national program, but it is what we have. I would say that when I was chairman, we actually funded money into the UC system specifically for stem cell IP personnel, because as the UC system has been squeezed by the state, it doesn't make sense to me, but they have cut back on the personnel handling the intellectual property. So it can't get out there faster because of the personnel shortage. So foundations really, as a legitimate target, might look at a field where there is IP available. One of the reasons it's not getting licensed out from the UCs or other public institutions is the lack of high-quality personnel. Potentially through one of the UC foundations, you can fund that personnel and help break that logjam more broadly than just even the disease area you might be looking at.
Yeah, I would say UCSD actually has a significant effort and significant personnel working in technology transfer, and there are a number of small companies I know that have been very happy with the way that has been handled, the licensing, et cetera, has been handled through UCSD. I think at the state level, president's office, there is more work that needs to be done. Obviously.
Right. The UC San Diego is exceptional in many ways.
So once again, let me thank the panel. I think that your comments were very, very great. And again, I think we all want to thank you for the leadership that you've provided to make this possible. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.